Welcome back to the Diary of a CFO podcast, the podcast where finance leaders share their lessons, challenges, and wins that shape their careers as well as their organizations. Today, I'm so delighted to have with me Professor Vasima Nentz, also known as B. Professor B. Nentz is a licensed CPA with over 15 years of professional experience in accounting, budgeting, and financial management. She works full-time as a CFAO, Chief Financial Administrative Officer of a multimillion-dollar documentary film not-for-profit, while moonlighting as an accounting professor, accounting translator, and published author. Welcome to the show, Professor B.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. You have such an impressive career, spanning from finance, accounting, education, entrepreneurship. What initially drew you to accounting, and did you always envision your career to have so many dimensions?
Yeah, so I had never heard of accounting before. So I was in high school. I loved math. I thought I wanted to be a doctor. Science wasn't my thing. And so I just did some research and tried to figure out what kind of jobs made sense for people who liked math. And that's how I found accounting.
That's awesome. So you have so many roles. I just want to go role by role, starting with the one you have now, the first one, which is Chief Financial and Administrative Officer. Tell us more about it. What do you find exciting or difficult about the role?
So at this role, I oversee all of the accounting and finance, but as well as like the administrative pieces of the work. One of the exciting things about this role is it does allow me to really concentrate more on like just the accounting and finance pieces. But the challenging part is this organization does a lot of multi-year gifts. And that's my first time kind of dealing in that arena of accounting and finance. And
ooh, not-for-profit accounting.
Yes, non-for-profit accounting. So it's non-for-profit with a little edge because it's, you know, like we do a lot of fundraising for documentary films, and films take 5 years to produce. A film can be open for 5 years and we're accepting donations. And so tracking that money is a very interesting challenge.
Oh, wow. Nice. But then before becoming CFO, you were COO before and you worked at other organizations. So can you tell a little bit about how being a COO maybe have helped you? How did you get to be a COO in the first place, especially since you're starting in accounting?
So I started that role as a director of finance. I think over time, I was there for 7 years. Over time, my role kind of grew and took on different elements because I'm a multi-passionate person. And so I also do really well in person with like meeting people and helping with programming and other things. And mm-hmm. So when it came time to advance, it didn't make sense for me to be just Chief Financial Officer because I was doing so many other pieces of the program as well. In addition to finance, in addition to HR, in addition to administrative, I was also over some of the operational pieces.
Wow, that's a lot. Even within it, what do you think makes a CFO successful in that space, in a not-for-profit space? Because in any organization, yes, you will have to deal with a lot as a CFO. Some say you're a therapist, you're the friend, you're the buffer. You have to go beyond just finance and accounting. But I feel like in not-for-profits, there is also other aspects that you have to be aware of or intentional about. What would you say about that?
Flexibility is like so important. I think in nonprofit organizations, because of the lack of resources, a lot of times we end up wearing so many hats. Being open in my last role, being open to be more a part of the programming and the operations really helped me get to the chief level, honestly, because I showed that I was able to take on more and be diverse in the things that I could manage. And the thing that a lot of times we don't think about is that accounting and finance lends itself so perfectly to other things. So mm-hmm. we're good at numbers, but there are a lot of other aspects of like a nonprofit organization. We graduated from the School of Business. So, you know, like when you put your business hat on, a little HR, a little, you dabble in so many things. And so that really just makes you really marketable when it comes to trying to advance in your career.
And that shows how accounting can be your superpower, right? Having that background, which leads me to your second role, which is professor. Like, what drew you to teaching? I'm always amazed at people who are in teaching for two reasons. First, COVID, and I had my two young kids at home, and I'm like, how do these teachers do? And then also realizing I don't have the patience. I know the stuff. If I explain twice, I turn into the Tasmanian devil. Like, why don't you get it? So what drew you to teaching? How do you like it?
Well, so my mom is actually a teacher. She was. She retired a couple of years ago. And so I feel like it was something that was always kind of in the background and like it was in my blood. And then mm-hmm. it came to the surface, but I don't know if I would have done it in grade school, but I teach accounting. And it's just something that, I don't know, I feel like it's like a passion that snuck up on me. And so when I got the opportunity to teach, you know, I took it. And then I honestly feel like one of the teaching jobs I had is one of my favorite jobs that I've had in my career, the full-time teaching jobs.
Tell us more. So what grade or what part of accounting do you teach typically, the topics?
I do a lot of intro to accounting. I love the babies, you know, the intro, like they come in thinking about debits and credits as it relates to like their bank account. And I'm like, no, don't think of that. Like, forget that. That's my favorite part. I love doing that. So I've done advanced accounting. I've done a lot of cost accounting, managerial accounting, but my favorite is financial intro accounting 101. And I always teach for the most part at community colleges, but right now I'm also teaching kind of a little bit on my TikTok channel. You know, I have a YouTube page as well. So I just try to drop nuggets when I can.
That is awesome. Because accounting is hard. The debits and the credits, I think it's that time where everybody, I feel, either gets it or you don't. And that's the part you either hate it or you're going to love accounting. For me, I went into my first class and I was like, yes, this is so cool. And my roommate was like, what the heck? Because we took it together. So you just mentioned your TikTok page and I know you went viral on TikTok. So, and you are known as the accounting translator. You have educational content, like you said, on YouTube. Tell us more. Like, how is that going for you?
It's been a whirlwind, really, because I've always been putting out content and, you know, kind of just as it feels right. But this is like kind of going viral. So I went from almost 700 followers or something to like 42,000. It kind of made me feel like, oh, okay, this is really something. Let me try to organize this. Let me try to like, so I threw together a syllabus like over the weekend after this happened. And I've been trying to follow along pretty well. So I feel like sometimes things happen in our life where it forces us to like get serious about something that's probably already been there in the back, just marinating. And it's like, oh, now it's time to cook.
Yes, yes. I think it also tells a lot about traditional education, right? Because what we've seen in the news, the accounting news, I should say, is we have less people enrolling in college. But then here you are, you go on TikTok, you do a video about that accounting that we say we don't have enough students for, and you go viral. How do you have to change the content, maybe the way you are approaching it on social media versus what you do in the classroom?
Yeah, I think it's the age-old thing that happens where, like, with each new generation, we have to figure out new ways to reach the new generation. Especially in accounting, for me, like as a teacher, I think a lot about AI and automation and how it's affecting the new up and coming accountants. Especially I teach at community college. And so most of them will be like bookkeepers and like intro level accountants. And a lot of that work now is being done with automation. What I try to do is teach skills that give them a leg up. And so I think part of what happens with TikTok is it presents like a unique opportunity because I'm not held by the confines of a curriculum that is kind of loosely given when you teach at a college. It's like, I can teach accounting from a personal accounting perspective, which is kind of what I'm doing. It's like your personal income statement, your personal budget. And I have accountants on there who are commenting like, I never understood this until you told me equity was net worth. I'm like, those concepts that overlap in it just gives more freedom to be able to discuss these things in ways that people can really understand and relate to their everyday life.
Wow. So what was that video that went viral? Like, what was the topic? How was it presented? And what does it really say about how we teach it in college?
Basically, it started with another professor, Dr. Barlow, who just got on TikTok and did an intro for her actual real life African-American history course. And then a lot of other professors got on and did an intro for their make-believe courses mm-hmm. that was kind of a combination that would be like a combination with her course. That was the video for me that went viral where mm-hmm. I was, welcome to Intro to Accounting. I see that you've been enrolled in Dr. Barlow's class and these other classes, but now you need an accounting class. And I'm here to answer that call, basically.
Wow, that's amazing. And what would you say are some of the topic that people probably found refreshing, like you said, about equity, about learning that they probably didn't see or learn through school?
I think that's been the biggest one so far is I developed like a spreadsheet, a Google sheet that I give away for free where people can go and actually fill in their personal information. I think the lesson that's been the most engaging so far has been like the personal income statement conversation. I developed an Excel spreadsheet where people can go and drop in their personal finance information mm-hmm. and take a look at like where they are, their spending from a monthly perspective. So they drop in their revenue, their money coming in, they drop in their expenses, money going out, and then they look and they see kind of what that is. And then we take it the next step and look at it from a budget perspective. Okay, so this is how much you spend in January. What does that mean for your budget? Did you overspend? Basically, it's making them look at their finances, which I think some of them we avoid a lot of times, but it's really, I think pulling them in at a level, you can talk about yourself, right? You can look at yourself. Accounting makes you look at businesses and a lot of the conversations relate to businesses and you can do it for a business. But when you're thinking about yourself, you're looking at your bank account. I think that's a way that's an intro for people that makes it easy for them to come into the conversation.
Wow. It's really eye-opening for myself because I remember when I was going through college, the only example in the textbook was Tootsie Roll, the Wiley book, Tootsie Roll Manufacturing Company. And pretty much throughout your curriculum, you are studying, you know, their cost of goods sold and studying all these things. And really the way you are approaching it is bringing it more personal. So the accounting part makes more sense. I think that's truly, truly brilliant. And what would you say are some of the things that we could do better at the college level, not just to increase the enrollment, but the whole experience of learning accounting and finance?
I think the foundation information that we learn is so important. It's so like, you can't move away from it because systems will break down or they, you know, it's still only as good as what you put in it. But I do feel like there is a need for more emphasis on the types of fintech is like crazy nowadays. I did teach like a computerized accounting where we did some QBO, like some QuickBooks lessons, which was, I think was really helpful. But I feel like that's like even QuickBooks nowadays, it's just like, it's not old, it's still necessary, but there's just like so many more levels to it. We could set our students up better if they come out of school with more information on how to use some of the financial technology that exists so that they are getting ahead of AI. So it's like, yes, I know how, I'm a bookkeeper, but I know how to use these systems. And so that's why you should hire me.
Yes, that's definitely an edge. And I think another one that would be nice would be different industries, right? Like I said, it was Tootsie Roll, it was all manufacturing. And when I came out of college, the company I worked for was manufacturing and technology, so they had software development. And then they wanted to do subscriptions. And I was like, this was not in the pamphlet. It wasn't in the book. We could do more.
Oh gosh, that's such a good point. And even in the nonprofit world, like I started off with an internship at a public accounting firm because that's kind of with the book, the textbook and the teachers, that's kind of the way that they push you. And then I got there and was like, oh my gosh, I don't like this. So I felt lost, you know? So eventually I found nonprofit accounting, but it wasn't necessarily due to any help that I received in college or school. I just knew what I didn't want to do based off of what we were being pushed towards. So that's a really good point, is a more thorough illustration of like all the different things that you can do in accounting, not just public accounting, but like industry, manufacturing, like all the things that you just said, government, nonprofit, education.
SaaS, like it's huge. And even now into treasury and FP&A, like there is stuff that I didn't even know back in college because I feel like we are either in investment banking. If you finance, you don't think FP&A. And if you're accounting, it's going to be a public accounting CPA and you're like, I'm not sure about it.
Exactly. I feel like even now, like as somebody who's been in the profession for a while, like things will happen in it. Like I've had conversations with people and they feel like they wanted to leave the profession. I think we were talking to somebody at lunch. And I think a lot of times the reason that happens is because we feel trapped in the segment of the accounting profession that we have been in or that we're looking at. And so we don't see that the accounting profession is so wide and there's so many ways that you can go in it. That's really not good.
It's not. And I'm glad you're doing your part, being so involved, you know, in colleges, beyond being a CFAO and being on TikTok, on YouTube, but you're also an author. You wrote Sunny Gets Money. Please share about the book, because I was like, yes, Wasia, maybe I should start writing a book, man, after two pages. Again, renewed appreciation, besides teacher, to author. So amazing. Tell us more about your book.
So Sunny Gets Money is a financial literacy book for kids. It's a picture book. My husband did the illustration for it. And for me, it's just when I look at, like, as a Black American, there are just so many lessons that we don't learn from a financial literacy perspective. So just how to save, how to invest our money, how to get good credit and keep good credit. Book doesn't go into all of that, but all of that was kind of the reason behind writing this book. Is I was looking at our kids, my son, who was the inspiration for the image on the cover. And, you know, we wanted it to be like Black boy, a chocolate Black boy. I'm thinking about him and his experience with money as he, you know, goes out into the world. And I don't want it to be like my experience with money where, you know, I had to make so many mistakes before I learned from them and got better. Mm-hmm. I want our children to that financial stuff to be instilled in them, like growing up, like they learn how to walk, they learn how to tie their shoe, they learn how to save. It's just like, that's just a part of growing up. My thought process was to get to the kids, not that they're too far gone, but I want the kids.
Yes. And the adults probably needed to, because I was speaking with my financial advisor and he was like, Wasia, you'd be amazed at how many people work in finance and accounting and that finances are not what it should be. Like, we do such a good job for companies, the companies that we run, the companies that we keep the books for, the companies we do the FBN and the treasury for, but for our own finances, we're not that great at managing them.
Yes. Yes. I felt like a hypocrite for years. I had horrible credit. And part of that is, you know, some of those hard lessons. I messed up my credit in college. You know, I didn't know how to get out of the hole that I was in. And so being an accountant, counting other people's money, you know, figuring out, like giving other people advice, it felt so hypocritical because behind the scenes, I'm like, I can't even apply for a credit card if I wanted one. So yeah, what you're saying is exactly true. It's a thing that we deal with.
How can we do better though? Like, I like how you have your book already for kids and maybe I'm suggesting you to do one for adults, but no pressure there. But how do you think, like, why do you think we in that state really? It's almost because when I heard it from my financial advisor, I was like, I'll always feel like we will be, you know, top of the game. I know Dave Ramsey had a survey and he was talking about the people that the next door millionaire, right? The people that we wouldn't know are doing so great in their personal finances. But what would you say are some of the reason we are in that state as finance and accounting professionals?
I think it's like a don't ask, don't tell, don't talk about it. Just like go keep moving along. I think the problem with that is like I had bad credit for years and nobody knew. It's one of those like taboo things to talk about, especially I think when you're an accounting and finance professional, because there is an expectation that my CPA who is giving me advice is killing this, right? It's already, their life is completely set up and we're human. And especially from a credit perspective, you know, it takes years to get good or bad credit, you know, it can. And so there's a level of shame that comes along with it when you're not in tip-top shape and you're an accountant. And I think that that's like a huge misconception because first of all, we count money for businesses, not individuals most of the time. Uh-huh. And just because I'm counting the money for an organization doesn't necessarily mean that everything in my life has flown in a way that has allowed me to be able to do that. You know, a lot of things happen that put people in difficult situations. You could have had the best situation and then you get divorced. Somebody passes away. So there's a lot of things that will explain it, but I think it's just, we just don't talk about it.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. And going back to you having that accounting as a superpower, right? So you were your CFO seat, you were a COO before becoming a CFO, which is amazing. You're a professor, you teach accounting. You are translating accounting for people on TikTok. You wrote a book for kids and you soon do one for adults. How do you, would you say all these things come together? Like, how do you balance all these roles? How can probably one feed another? Like, how does it come together for you?
I think when I really take a step back and I look at it, accounting at its foundation is my passion. And so when you have a passion for something, it doesn't feel like work. Now, there are other things about the actual work that I do that feels like work, but the TikTok, the book, the, you know, translation, the accounting superpower, like speaking and things like that, it doesn't feel like work. I'm always trying to find time to do it because it's like, oh, what can I do on TikTok today? Like I made after the Super Bowl, I made like a video at, you know, Kendrick Lamar because it was just, it's just fun for me. And so I did a video about like Kendrick Lamar's accountant while he's performing, you know, like from that point of view. And so it's just, you know, stuff like that is fun for me. I think it's also needed. And so that's where like my passion and the needs of the world kind of interconnect. So because of that, it doesn't feel like I'm doing, when you list it out like that, it makes it feel like 20.
Oh, I get the same. That's why I'm asking you, because we're so much alike. Oh my God.
We are, but I don't think it feels like work in that way, for aspects of it. And so I think one of the things that I'm looking forward to doing in the future is figuring out how to get more into those pieces that don't feel like work and further away from some of the pieces that are feeling like work and draining and things like that. So
yes, I think it's a draining part because when you do something you enjoy, the energy comes. Even if you feel like you were down, when you're doing something you like sometimes at the end of the day, I'll be like, oh, somebody's calling me as one of my mentee or coachee. And I'm like, oh, I'm sad. But then I get energy and I'm like, oh, yeah, you should do this. You should do this. Have you tried this? And I'm excited and I hear the success stories and I'm like, yes, we're winning. The energy comes to do those extra thing. It's amazing.
Yes, it is amazing. It's amazing what you can do in the evening, late in the evening, when normally you're like, oh, I'm too tired. But you still have energy for that thing. And I think there's something there. There's something where it's like, oh, I should explore this more. And I'm like, I feel like I'm talking to myself. I'm giving myself like a little sermon, like I should explore this more. But I think that's a big piece of it, is like really leaning in and like paying attention, like being aware of those pieces of, like, even if it's your job, is like, what parts of this job feel like it gives me joy and what other parts feel like it's draining? And then obviously it's a job. So sometimes you can't not do the draining part, but maybe you can get somebody else to do it. Delegate. So that's the CFO in us.
Yes, delegate. That is amazing. And I think too, as leaders, we don't like to admit it, but yes, you also need help. There are things that you have to do because you have to do, but it can also empower somebody else. Like what you find draining in your role, probably because you've done it so much, will be so empowering for somebody else.
Oh my gosh, yes.
They'll be like, yes, I want to do some of it, but you have done it so many times that, oh, I have to do it again. Like, oh, I have to report to the board again. Like, oh, I want to do this. So yes. Not a bad thing.
It's so true.
It's not a bad thing. Now, what would you say you do outside of work? So I know work for you is different things, but what are some of the things you enjoy doing outside of work?
I think mostly spending time with my family. And then, you know, I like to cook. I don't do it a lot, but when I get in there and I'm like, you know what? I enjoy this. I sing a little bit. I'm all over the place. I have a guitar behind me. I don't know if you can see it.
But, nice.
I can't play it though. I keep trying.
It's there for the decoration.
I know basic chords, but no, that's another dream, is to be able to play it. But, you know, so I dabble in so many different things. I'm like an adventurer in the way, I'm a planned adventurer. I'm not just like spontaneous one, but I like to dabble and try new things. I love to travel. I'm all over the place.
Oh, that's good. I mean, to me, and I like how you say planned adventurer because it shows the accountant in you. Yes, I want this, but does it make sense? Cost benefit analysis.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
That is awesome. And my last question for you, second to last question, what would you say is your favorite quote and why?
My favorite quote is, service to others is the rent that we pay for our room here on earth, by Muhammad Ali. I feel like I govern my life by that quote, is like, you know, what are you doing to serve others? Because we're a community, right? Like, we're, none of us are in silos. None of us were meant to be here alone and an individual. So it's kind of like, what are you doing to give back? So service to.
So in your service to others, what would you say are some advice you would give this upcoming generation of finance and accounting leaders?
I think it's just to make yourself available. Don't allow yourself to get siloed, you know? So volunteer for different things, like volunteer for nonprofit organizations, government organizations, and just be out in the world and allow yourself the space to not feel like you have to be pigeonholed into one aspect of accounting or what, one aspect of life in general. Like, the world is so big, the field is so vast. Keep reaching and keep looking, and don't allow people to put you in a box, and don't live in a box, you know, explore.
Wow. And where can we all find your viral TikTok videos? Because I want to hear it like right now, because not everybody will actually read the show notes.
Yes. So I am online as Professor_Nance on most platforms. So Instagram, TikTok. And then I also have a website that is under construction, ProfessorNance.com. So I'm working on trying to build that out. But yes.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing. And thank you so much for being on the show. This was so, so good. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's always great to see you, Asiya.
And that's it for today's episode of The Diary of a CFO. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to like, review, subscribe, and share with others. Our website is thediaryofacfo.com. That's where you can find all the episodes, access all the guest profiles, see their bios and the social media links. It is also the place where you can apply to be a guest on the podcast and have information about how you can sponsor the show. As always, if there is any topic you would like me to cover in the future, just email me at ask@thediaryofacfo.com. Again, the email is ask@thediaryofacfo.com. See you soon.